Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the James Inc. podcast. I'm your host, Ayan.
And my name is Elisa Bell. I am the executive director.
Absolutely. And today's guest is a trailblazing woman. She is the representative of District 73. And today we will be unfolding her success story and her family story in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So thank you, Ms. Goodwin, for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me. And I appreciate those very kind words.
Oh, absolutely. I know you come from a bloodline of trailblazing, so I'm so happy to be here in your space. All right.
I'm glad to be in your space.
Thank you. So if you could please introduce yourself for those who are unaware and give us a bit about your upbringing.
Well, my name is Regina Goodwin. I'm state representative for House District 73, right where we are right now, where you're broadcasting from. The studio is in House District 73.
Right.
Historic Greenwood District, Black Wall Street. And wow. When you ask about my upbringing, my upbringing is one of parents and grandparents and great-grandparents that taught us, and I said all the time, that services and rent we pay for our room and board on earth. And if we're going to be taking up this space, what are we contributing to this space?
Absolutely.
So it's very important that from our bloodline, as you say, your bloodline, that we continue the excellence that's in all of our families.
Excellent. Well, I love that. And we really want to unfold how your family has changed the narrative for Tulsa. And, you know, like you said, we're in the Black Wall Street and it has so much history here. So I know it from the book Built from the Fire by Victor Luckerson. I have read that. Is it your grandfather, Ed Goodwin?
Yes.
So he was the trailblazer who created the Eagle, right?
That's correct. He yes. and his father, James Henry Goodwin, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
But my grandfather, E.L. Goodwin Sr., because my daddy was Ed Goodwin Jr.
Okay.
E.L. Goodwin Sr., my grandfather, was, even before the Oklahoma Eagle, the newspaper, he was the youngest entrepreneur on Black Wall Street.
Really?
Yeah. So he had a haberdashery. So it was a men's clothing store. And so that was one of his first businesses.
Wow. Do you have any comments?
Well, I'm just wild.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, the whole side
the
of
history
it.
Here.
Exactly. Being born and raised here, I know some of it, but just to hear it from an actual descendant just makes it that much more real. So I appreciate you sharing it with our young people.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yes.
And our theme for the year is changing the narrative. So I really want to get advice or any tips for you and for our viewers and listeners. How can they change their narrative?
So I think first, in order to change a narrative, right, you have to ask yourself, does the narrative need to be changed? So before we start asking that question, how do we change the narrative? Does the narrative need to be changed, first of all?
Okay.
Secondly, people have to be really true to themselves. I think they need to be people that have courage to ask questions, to be critical thinkers. And I think people have to not only have that degree of integrity, but the transparency that's needed to look within ourselves first. How
right,
can we be our best selves? How can we be our best selves? And then we look outward in terms of the surroundings. And then I'm a woman of faith, so God is very important in my life. So all of that has to work together. So when we talk about a narrative, we identify our surroundings, see does the narrative need to be changed, and what is that within us that can contribute to that change?
Wow. That's an amazing response. Okay. So what is something you would tell your younger self knowing what you know now?
Well, I will tell you this. I hear that question a lot.
You know, do?
What would you absolutely. What would you tell your younger self? And I think as we grow through life, right, everybody has to go through that growing period. We have to, I say, experience is your best teacher. And so I don't know if there's anything that I would tell my younger self, because my younger self has to be free enough to move through that period. So I don't think there's anything that I'd tell my younger self. But what I will say is that when I was younger, I was raised well. I was raised by folks that did not play. Speak to my grandparents on the Goodwin side, but also had grandparents on the Parker side, my mother's side.
Okay.
And these were folks that loved community. Certainly they contributed to community and they wanted the best from us. They would say to us that And you don't just do, you outdo. Average is not okay if you can do better. My mother would say, however, if you do bring a C into the house and that is the best you could do, then we're good with it. But if you could have done better, why aren't you doing better? So I can tell you that I had a rearing and I was blessed really to have that kind of environment that shaped us and told us, you know, whether we were 2 or 5 or 17, that everybody has to bring something to the table.
Right.
If we weren't working, right, and we're 11, then you got one job. That's to go to school, show up. If you don't know, ask the teacher. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Mm-hmm. Don't be afraid to say you don't know and to grow thereby. So I think when you talk about younger selves, I think it's important to have this intergenerational connectivity even today. Mm-hmm. Young folks need to be learning from the older folks. Older folks need to be learning from the younger folks. And I think that is how we get along further and faster. It's not necessarily what I would tell my younger self. I'm thankful that I had folks that had the experience and had gone through what I would go through later that would say to me, hey, maybe you don't want to go down that path, or maybe you want to do this. So like I say, I don't have to stick my finger in the electric socket because somebody's going to tell me that's not going to be a good experience. So I'm going to take their word for it because they've done it. Now, if I want to be hard-headed, I can go over there and try it for myself, right? So I can just say I'm blessed to have had older folks to listen to that had paid their dues, that had given to society, had loved God and loved family. And I think community grows in that way. You know, we had a whole village that looked after all of us, you know?
That's a blessing.
Oh, absolutely. If they saw you cutting up around the corner, they'd be like, I'm going to tell your mama. Mm-hmm. Right.
So, as you're supposed to. And I feel like the further we get into our society and communities, we're getting further away from, you know, being cohesive learners. Like you said, the older generations are coaching the younger generations and the younger generations are, you know, sharing the same information, you know, just being cohesive about the learning aspect.
And open. We got to be open.
Transparent.
Because we got some young folks today that somehow think folks are too old to do X, Y, and Z. Mm. And data shows us that the older you become, if you're blessed to become older, that means you've been through something.
Right.
Right? So I would think that folks would be open to the experiences of others.
Right.
Yeah, the growth of others.
I agree.
If I can jump in.
Yeah.
I have two questions. The first question is, who was the greatest influencer for you in your family?
I'm going to say God. Again, when we talk about, is there something greater than yourself? Mm-hmm. Is there something that shows you over and over your own flaws and your own vulnerabilities, that we're not all of that? God is God, right? And I heard early on, your arms are too short to box with God. Mm-hmm. So if I can establish that, and understand that within that realm I've got to operate, been told don't ever get ahead of God, that's very important. So the greatest influencer, I think, in our family would be God. And then we work our way and navigate our way, understanding that there's a God that says it's already all right. There's a God that says we're already overcomers. Mm-hmm. There's a God that says even when things don't go your way, that it's going to be all right, right? And that we draw faith and conviction, strength, from that. And I think it's so important in these crazy times that we're living in right now.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Now, tell me your top three memories of growing up in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Whoa, Lord. I don't have top three. I don't have top three now. I don't have top three. But growing up in Oklahoma, particularly Tulsa and in this community, again, I can tell you, I remember running down the streets of Greenwood. I grew up on 1415 North Greenwood. And I remember the sense of community. I remember literally in front, right, directly in front of my house was the church, First Baptist Church of North Tulsa. That was 1415 North Greenwood, right? Mm-hmm. Directly behind my house, I could walk across the parking lot because there were houses there during that time and go to Carver Middle School. So I could go to the church right in front of me. I could go to the school right behind me. The hospital that I was born in was a block away from me. That was Moton Hospital. Moton, not Morton.
How do you spell that?
It's M-O-T-O-N, and the name changed over the years. Originally, it was Moton Hospital. It was later changed to Morton. So I was born and raised, as many Black folks, because it was that's the only hospital you could be born in, right?
My
segregation,
et cetera.
Oh, wow.
So you had the hospital over to a block over, and then over to my left, we had a library. We had within the same block a funeral home, right? Jack's Memory Chapel. So within a block or two of my home, we had the whole circle of life, where I was born, where I could create a faith, where I could be educated. Certainly there were businesses, Latimer's Barbecue, literally, very close to Moton Hospital. So that's a memory that I had, the sense of community right there, the whole circle of life right there.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, and my family grew up on Young Street. So we were 2-3 blocks off of Greenwood, probably 5 or 6 blocks north of Pine.
Yeah.
So all of those things are familiar to me.
Yep.
My top three memories are probably Gap Band, having a concert at Booker T on the football field.
Okay. All right.
Tony Mason singing at Hijinks. And probably the third one was the Greenwood bus that drove down the street in front of my grandfather's house every day.
Okay.
Those are my
A Greenwood bus?
There was a city bus that drove down Greenwood past Moton, went down to, I'm horrible with streets, but I think that's Exiler, made a left, then made a right on Frankfort, came down Frankfort, made a right on Young Street, went down Young Street and made a left on Garrison, and then in the whole circle. So my whole entire youth, I rode the city bus with my grandmother.
Right.
And now, I don't remember a lot about Greenwood.
Right.
I do remember some of the stores, and I remember coming downtown to go to Crest with my grandmother.
Yeah, for sure. In the latter years, of course, the businesses were dwindling, right? And these are not my top three memories, okay, but these are some of the memories I had. I remember as a child meeting Muhammad Ali, right?
That was one of Muhammad.
Absolutely. I love Muhammad Ali till this day.
Wow.
Just his love for people, his humor, his confidence, especially in a time when white folks were telling us we weren't that great, right? And here was a black man that was strong enough and bold enough to say, I am the greatest, right? And but he said it with a certain humility. We knew he was joking. We knew he didn't think he was greater than, as he would say, Allah. But I love that about him. I love the ability to, I met him twice, actually. Wow. I met him when I was about 7 years old or 8, and then I was able to meet him later when I was in college. So I love that whole experience. And another experience, I remember Christmases at my house, right, where we would go out and get a live Christmas tree, drag it in the house, you know, and we wanted to make sure that the Christmas tree is going to touch the ceiling, you know, and then we decorating the tree and having that warmth of love and a mama that was a fantastic cook, a daddy that was helping bring the tree in. My daddy just knew everybody, never met a stranger. And we used to say, Daddy, he's like, come meet my friend. I was like, Daddy, you just met that man at the bus stop, right? You don't even know this man, right? This is my friend. So just, again, a sense of family and a growing up in community. But I have, just like you all, we have zillions of memories that are great memories just growing up. And for those, and again, I count it a blessing because I know everybody doesn't have great memories growing up.
Well, that is a great segue to my next question. Okay. In the book, Built from the Fire, your dad describes going to MLK's funeral. From what I can gather, you probably were 5, 6 years old.
Yep.
What stories do you remember him telling you of that?
You know what? My father used to always carry a really old-fashioned camera, right?
Oh.
With the big lens. It was like made out of aluminum. Folks that are photography buffs, they'll know what kind of camera that was. But he always carried his camera. And then I remember that they had gone down to the funeral, right, to actually be at the actual funeral where Martin Luther King and the mule draw, you know, in front of the carriage. And then also remember that, I remember that. And I also remember that when Martin Luther King had come to town, now these are the stories I remember. I remember them telling me about a meeting, Martin Luther King and, my Uncle Jim, being a young student at Notre Dame at the time. And he had the opportunity, if I'm not mistaken, to introduce Ben Heel. If I'm not mistaken, then Ben Heel introduced Martin Luther King. It was either that or Chappelle. But just hearing those stories is incredible to me that they actually had a chance to meet Martin Luther King. Mm-hmm. I would later be able to meet Coretta Scott King. I was able to meet Coretta Scott King, his daughter Yolanda, some of the children. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that just to, you know, that's incredible. That one, he was in Tulsa, mm-hmm. and saw fit that Tulsa was worthy of being here.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I know of a person that actually attended the funeral, so that stuck out for me. Mm-hmm. Growing up and hearing the stories, mm-hmm. and then just to think that someone right here in my community actually was there.
But they were covering the story now for the Eagle, right? Yes. This was newsworthy, right? So they got to be where the happenings
are.
And certainly they were with him in his life, and certainly wanted to be with the whole experience of the passing of Martin Luther King, what that meant to this nation. And everybody got to remember, Martin Luther King wasn't that beloved figure then, right? That's why he was murdered, mm-hmm. right? And you see these, well, in actually Memphis. Coming up on the 17th, we've got mm-hmm. Martin King parade mm-hmm. coming up, and everybody speaks of him in such glowing terms. But this mm-hmm. is a man who was executed, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
I think at his time, they said he had a favorability rating of like 29%, you know?
Wow.
Yeah. So in his time, he was someone who was changing the narrative because it was... Even now, we know the narrative is not good, right?
Right.
We know the context in which folks want to place us and how they want us to be, right? Even when it comes to our history, right? Trying to marginalize our history,
completely
trying to demonize
it.
Words like diversity, equity, inclusion, right? We're not in a good place right now. So you're right. This narrative needs to be addressed. But what we can't do is let folks define us.
Right.
Right. And there's a difference when you're talking about changing the narrative. Mm. You have to ask yourself, what is that narrative? Because we cannot let anybody define who we are.
Right.
So just because they say it so doesn't make it so.
Right.
There's a difference. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, you know, and that's kind of how we landed on the theme of changing the narrative. Mm-hmm. So many of our young parents and so many, when you think about teen and adolescent parenting, you think of all of the stereotypes. And Ayan is here as a great example of just because you become a parent at a young age does not make you the stereotype.
Right. And you didn't give up on us. You know, that's why I'm here today, because that is what happens.
Yes.
You know, like you said, they're telling us what we are and that's not what we are.
That's right. That's right.
So I'm very thankful.
Oh, absolutely. Like I say, in this day and age, if we allow folks to tell us who we are, we're in trouble.
Yes.
We're in trouble. So we have to have that self-love, understand our self-worth,
mm-hmm.
and be about the business of demonstrating that, right? Mm. In the toughest of times, right? That's the deal. Because folks want us to give up. Folks want us to go sit in a corner and be quiet. Mm. And God gave us vocal cords for a reason.
Right. And that's one of our rights. Freedom of speech.
So you got that right.
So... I wanted to ask, what is something that young people should know about the Goodwin family? We're sitting right here on the stumping ground. You know, you guys trailblaze here. So what should we know moving forward and to highlight the history here for your family?
You know, and again, I want to be real careful about saying what folks should know, right? Because I would hope, really, that all of us are curious enough about each other's families,
right?
Curious enough about how did we get here? So it's not just the Goodwin family, right? Because for our family has a story, but every family has a story.
Mm-hmm.
So the question becomes, is there something in our history that resonates with them? Is there something in our history? If they were to know the very buildings that exist right now, that 100 block of Greenwood, it was because my uncle and my grandfather fought to preserve those buildings. That's why they exist right now,
mm-hmm.
right? Because they had bulldozed everything on Greenwood, and it was my grandfather and uncle said that they wanted to have first rights of refusal in terms of buying that property or having some say,
mm-hmm.
because other folks didn't care anything about those buildings. So the fact that they remain, it's because of my uncle and my grandfather having, one, the business savvy and the boldness to tell the city of Tulsa, you're not just going to destroy our heritage, you're not going to destroy our history, you're not going to destroy these buildings, because they matter. And it means something not only to that generation, but to the generations moving forward, right? Certainly, we have the oldest black newspaper in the state of Oklahoma. What does that mean for Cornell West, who told me, hey, I grew up, I learned how to read by selling the Eagle and reading the Oklahoma Eagle, right? There are folks that we, I think, I like Cornell West, right? Mm-hmm. For those that know him, if they don't know him, they need to get to know him. Well, they don't need to do anything. Let's find out if they're curious enough to find out and see if it might somehow enrich their lives when they find out about other folks that have come before them, mm-hmm. that have lived in this community, right? So whether that's John Hope Franklin, whether that's Julia Hare, whether that's Alfre Woodard, tremendous names, tremendous folks, great folks to know. We could go on and on and on. A tremendous list of people that have been here, you know. Mm-hmm. Don't get me started. Mabel Little, Mabel Rice, Julius Pigges, you know, Leroy K. Jordan. The list goes on and on and on of folks that have given of their time and raised families here and have helped shape this community. And I just think it's good that if you're curious about how we become better, let's look at some of the folks that had made it better, right? And what did they do? And how did they fight, right? You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a great segue.
That's what we wanted.
Something that has bothered me since one of the earlier times that we met.
Okay.
You said, Alisa, who are your people? Who is your people, girl? Who is your people? And I struggled with it. And I thought about it from then until now. Mm-hmm. And I think if I remember correctly, I started talking about my husband's people. I started talking about all of these other people, but not my people. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to tell you who my people
are. Okay.
My people, my grandfather was Allie B. Anderson. Allie B. and Beatrice Anderson raised 15 children at 530 East Young Street. Of that 15, eight of those second generation, my aunts and uncles graduated from high school. Of the third generation, my generation, we have 23 bachelor's degrees. We have 13 master's degrees. We have a doctor of pharmacy. We have a doctor of chiropractic medicine.
Beautiful.
Amazing.
My aunt Clarice graduated from the Mighty Mighty class in 1957 at Booker T. Washington. She moved to Oakland, California in 1964. She was the first black postmaster at the San Leandro and Haywood locations.
Wonderful.
In California. My Uncle Nate graduated from the Booker T. Washington class of 1956. He was inducted into the TSU Football Hall of Fame in 1996. He was inducted into the BTW Hall of Fame in 2012. He was the first African-American to officiate in the Southern Intercollegiate Athletic Association. He officiated in the second and fourth SEC championship
Trailblazing.
Games, and he was a ref for the 78th Rose Bowl games in California. Ah! He was a Kappa.
Ooh.
I am the descendant of coaches, teachers, philanthropists. My Aunt Dottie ran the Mohawk Manor Community Center for families for years and was instrumental in getting those children into college in her community.
That's right.
I can't even tell you the number of
the lives she impacted
because of her. My Aunt Clarice, I told you she was the first black postmistress. Mm-hmm. My cousin Cladella Evans was the first firefighter, female firefighter, African American female firefighter here in the city of Tulsa.
Wow.
So I wanted you to know who my people are.
I love it. And I love that you took the time. You were curious enough, right, to find out who your people are, because everybody has a story. Everybody has a story. And all of those folks, right, they help shape this narrative.
Mm-hmm. My grandfather.
Even today. So that is fantastic.
Was a deacon at Antioch Baptist Church and part of the founding membership. So
yes.
I have a rich history.
Absolutely.
Here in the North Tulsa community.
Absolutely.
And if we tell our stories, they will never be silenced. And we're going to tell our stories.
Because if we don't tell our stories, right, and we can tell our stories best. And that the stories need to be accurate because you've fallen into danger if you allow somebody else to tell your story. Mm. So you did a great job in doing your own research, finding about your people, right? So if anybody else wants to come up and tell you something differently, you can say, well, wait a minute, that's not quite that doesn't reflect in terms of the research that I have. So I love that. And, you know, there's an African proverb that says that when an ancestor dies, a library burns down. So if we don't get learn our history from our ancestors right now, if we don't have them get into a tape recorder, tell about their stories, everybody's not going to write a book. They're not going to have time to write a book. But they can get a recording. They can orally tell their story and pass it on. And it'd be good to record it so that for, as we talk about the younger generation, so that they really understand who they are, right? It would be good for them to talk to their mother, their father, their aunts, uncles, grandparents, to find out, who are we? Because it does matter. And you're going to find out. And you're going to find out that you're stronger than you ever thought you were, right? And you can get through much because they've gotten through it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, we are running out of time here. All right. We want to give you a few. You want to have any last words for
us?
Hey, I'm going to let you go.
I just want to thank you for having me today. Thank you for doing what you do. You do it very well. You have a tremendous presence.
Thank you.
Hey, you know, maybe you'll be doing a podcast today, but maybe we'll be seeing you in somewhere else in the future.
Yes, I sure hope so. Yeah. I really appreciate your time and willingness to come here today. I know everybody's on a tight schedule. So we really thank you. And we really hope that you can help us change the narrative. But you've already done that and your family has.
The narrative that we're experiencing, like I said, depends on the narrative we're talking about.
Right.
If we're talking about America, the narrative needs to change.
Right.
And I think we are, just by having a conversation, really speaking to it truthfully, knowing that we are going to have to be bold and we're going to stand up for ourselves because...
advocacy.
There you go.
Oh my.
Okay? So we have to be about that narrative and changing that narrative because America is not as beautiful as it should be.
Absolutely.
I agree.
But we can make it more beautiful.
And yes.
To that end, we want to have you back. We know that you're going into a session has started and that you're super busy.
Yes.
So we want to invite you back in the next 30 to 45 days.
Well, let me say this, Miss Bell. Let me say this as about a narrative. This is one woman that's going to get what she wants. And now I'm not committing on TV or wherever we are. We're not committing to that. But we are certainly blessed to have been here on this occasion because there's a lot going on. And I can't even begin to say, oh, yes, we're going to do that because lots going on. But I appreciate what you're doing. I appreciate the lives that you're changing and impacting.
Yes.
And if we're able to do this again, by all means, let's do it.
Well, amen.
We want you to tell us what young families need to be aware of as we're watching this legislative session, and as we're learning how to investigate. And
yeah,
watch.
We do not want this increase where they're saying they want to cut the personal income taxes down to zero, right? That doesn't make sense because we have to pay for our services that we have. And anybody talking about 0% personal income taxes, how do we pay for education? How do we pay for roads? How do we pay for health and human services? How do we pay for a mental health facility, right? That comes from when we pay taxes, that's our investment into the state, right? And what we have to do is make sure that we're getting a return on our investment. You know, that's that financial talk. What's your ROI, right? Well, we have to fight to make sure that our tax dollars come back into our community. That's what we need to be about. That's the narrative that we need to be focused on. Come down to the Capitol. Monday, we're having Black History Day at the Capitol. So come down and visit us on Monday. And again, when folks want to not acknowledge our history, you know, there is no American history without Black history.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Love y'all.
Love you.
Be careful.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for tuning in. Have a blessed one.